Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Today, Big Sean, Karen, you know, we got for the audience today, we have a new business spotlight. We're spotlighting another business superstar. So Karen, why don't you help us introduce this?
Okay, so this is so exciting for me personally because we have my friend Luis J. Gomez, who is a comedian, but also runs like, I think you run a million businesses, don't you? Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a few, but it all sort of branched out from, you know, the podcast network that we started and sort of this fan base that's really, really, you know, just passionate, and they want to support the artists and artists that want to create freely and, you know, just really, you know, everyone got into comedy to not have a boss and to not feel like they, you know, had somebody watching over them and you could really do whatever you want. We all originally thought you could just fuck off. We all thought it was video games and smoking weed and that was that.
Right.
Little did we know how much work goes into being a successful comedian, even if you're just a comic, because that's a business in itself. Yeah, what I do when I got very motivated was to figure out how to turn that audience and that fan base into multiple businesses. So we have a podcast network. We have a great merchandise business. We sell advertising beyond just our network, our podcast network. We sell advertising for you know, a bunch of different influencers that are off network.
What's the name of your network, the podcast network?
The name of the podcast network is the Gas Digital Network. Some of the popular shows on the network or some shows that I'm on, Legion of Skanks, Believe You Me with Michael Bisping. We also have Jamie
Wait, Joss. Did you just say Legion of Skanks?
Legion of Skanks, yes. Yeah. And Jamie Joss show, Tommy Dreamer from ECW, Hardcore Legend. Mm-hmm. Just a bunch of amazing comedians. Godfrey's got a show on the podcast, on the network. It's 23 shows. But then we also run a production company that produced Skankfest, which is sort of an alternative counterculture comedy festival that's like...
Can we rewind 1 second? I'm just sitting here after listening a marathon of Legion of Skanks and hearing you speak, and I've just met this another new guy. Like, I love that you have multiple hats, bro. I was like, now I hear the business guy come out in you. And
oh yeah,
I was like, wow, you're like, you know, when Karen decided asked for you to come on the show, I mean, I hope she introduces me the same way she introduces you to everybody else. She was like, it was honestly a 45 minute background on this guy, Lewis, from how good a father he is
to
how much businesses he runs to that. And he's Puerto Rican. I'm like, okay.
My credit's only okay, though.
Yeah.
I have good. I'm good. I'm on the border of good to great. I'm on that number right there.
God,
we're getting there. But think about how bad it was for so long. I didn't even think good credit was something that you could have. But the way that I was raised, I did not think that good credit was even an option. I thought you were just sort of like, you know, I was doomed to having shitty credit and a shitty financial situation like my mom and my all the family members before me. So it's, you know, I remember when I saw my credit was good, when I, because I just went to a company to, like, you know, pay everything the way you're supposed to pay it. And right. fucking they, I don't even do anything. I just pay them to make sure that everything's paid. And to, I guess there's certain months where you pay more and it ups your credit score than other months. I have no idea how any of this shit works. I'm just like, yeah, sure, do it. And when I saw my credit was good, when I just saw it was good, I
nearly
got misty-eyed. I got emotional. I swear to God, I got emotional because
that
I grew up Section 8 welfare. I didn't have a bank account until I was in my mid-20s.
Wow.
So it was like, it's such a, you know, it's a different, I wasn't raised right.
That's a lot of people can relate to that, though. A lot of people out there can relate to that. So that's big to hear, like, that progression, because there are people out there right now that need to know that there's another side to this. You can get your credit together, your business 100%.
Well, that's the other thing, is I've been living in New York City for 19 years, and it's like, I just moved out to New Jersey, and I just moved out to the burbs, and I was like,
So I heard your last episode talked about that.
Yeah, I want to get a car. So it's like, well, no, you need to go through the process. They're like, oh, no, you need good credit. You need to have, you know, if you don't own, I don't own anything. So for me to go and, like, just get a car, they're like, no, who is this guy? And I'm just used to getting whatever I want for the past 10 years. Cause comedians live a lifestyle where we just sort of, like I said, we don't have our own boss. We go where we want to go. We travel where we want to travel. And
say what you want to say.
Say what we want to say.
Trap, Lewis, like, I know so many comics, including people that I, like, look up to so much and respect, like, you know, these old school veterans of comedy, who I feel like are almost trapped in, like, this comedy, like, free-for-all. Like, it is still a brand and it is still a business. And, like, people, there's this, I think, comedy myth, kind of. And I only realized it was a myth, like, last year, which is that you're not entitled to a reward, right? Like, you can grind. There's this comedy vibe of, like, if you just grind, and you write your jokes every day and you get on stage multiple times a day, do all of that and hang out, comedy will bless you. And I've watched people not be blessed. Like, how did you avoid the trap of just thinking comedy is going to, like, fulfill itself?
Because the it's not going to bless you. I think what the blessing is for some, for me anyway, is I can set a goal and I can believe in it and I can follow the process and the steps in order to achieve those goals, right? And I set out a lot of goals and I fail a lot. I have a ton of ideas that don't work, but I constantly have this belief in my ability to do that. And comedy is sort of, you know, you have to sort of believe in this intangible thing. Like, you're telling jokes, and if that has to somehow equate to money in your bank account, it's to even explain.
So how do you
that,
do that? How do you do that?
I was actually going to say, to even explain that, I can't even tell you. I couldn't go give myself advice like, oh, well, this is step A to step B to step C in order to make money as a comedian. You have to be fluid. You know, this virus.
But you're always thinking how to monetize it, though. In the back of your mind, you're always on this, I'm going to monetize this. Like, nothing is for free in your mind kind of thing.
Sort of now, but here's what happened, okay? Because in the beginning, I wanted to just do things that I really liked and do projects that I really liked and things that excited me. And none of it was making me money. Like, nothing was making me money. And I remember when I first started paying my rent off my podcast, which was maybe like 5-6 years ago, whatever it was. Like, that was like this step.
Where
that's
huge.
Like, oh, shit, I'm making a grand off my podcast.
Yeah,
it was
huge.
Wild. It was wild to me that I could just, and I was doing the podcast for the love of it. So what happens is eventually you only have so much time in the day, and each of the projects that I had that I can be involved with have to be worth a certain amount of financial benefit as well. Beyond just the, obviously they have to be exciting from, you know, either a creative standpoint, or I'm also blessed in that I really do get excited about the business side of it, making deals and you know, the behind the scenes side of it, like what we've built with Gas Digital. We have the most incredible studio in New York City. We have all of these other amazing things that are happening. We've created, we have, you know, 15 producers that work for us, 40 hosts. I mean, we have people that literally, they make their money off of you know, me and my buddy Ralph having a conversation on the phone a few years ago with this idea that we had. And that idea has turned into, we have employees and we have, I mean, it's how I make all of my money, and I'm not rich, but I'm doing pretty well. I'm doing pretty damn good. If you would have told, you know, 21-year-old me where I'm at now at 38 years old, I mean, I would have thought that I hit the lottery, just in terms of, like, I didn't even think that was possible. That's like, awesome. I grew up in such poverty. You know, the idea of having, you know, owning a home, you know, having nice things, that was very, very foreign. And I had to sort of beat the idea of thinking small out of myself, because you think and you become emotional about money. You really hold on to, you know, that mentality. And especially in those formative years, if you spend your entire life on welfare, your mom is poor, she's on, you know, Section 8, she's not working, you know, there's not really much motivation. It wasn't like, I'm in the suburbs as well, where there's not like, it's not like New York City where there's like billionaires walking by you and there's Wall Street guys and there's this sense of motivation and business savvy. When you're out in the sticks, there's none of that. So you just have people using drugs and you have people, you know, not really thinking much of themselves, and you have to fight against that instinct. And that's where you talk about a systemic, you know, issue and you know, poor areas. That's a real issue that you have to sort of like, you know, overcome. And I'm lucky that I was able to see a path. But everyone has that path. There's no doubt about everyone in the world. There's an infinite amount of paths to get to whatever successes or riches that people want. They just have to be able to see it. If you can see it and recognize it, then you go, oh, step number one. Most people think this, what I say right now, unless they have sort of an entrepreneurial mind, which I'm sure listeners of your show do. A lot of people think of this as like, just, oh, it's a self-help Tony Robbins book, but it really is true. It's like, you know, I've personally lived a certain, you know, way, and I do believe in that philosophy.
Well, I'll tell you this, what you say, me not realize it, are like the key principles to success, especially when it comes to business. And I always say we're all born with a special gift, and those that are young and rich at a young age learn how to leverage that gift, you know. And you knew your talent is comic, and you were able to leverage it and build a business out of it and think, you know, you think, like you said it, you think big. Whatever idea you have, you're thinking on it on a macro level, rather than like, hey, I'm just going to open up, I'm going to go just perform. You're like, I want to bring employees. I want to create a brand. I want to create a studio. And that's all think and grow rich concept. And so even though you think you're all over the place, you're very narrow and you're very finite into what you're trying to do and what you're trying to achieve. And that's as applauding, you know, and I think that's why we brought you on the show, so people can understand, like, it's leveraging your skill set and knowing how to monetize it. And when you say fail, I like myself, I don't call them failures. I just call them learning experiences. And I don't dwell in them. You know, I learn, I fail. And I'm not as scared to fail.
It's a different angle, and we agree, obviously. But the reason I say fail and I do dwell on the failure, dwelling is the wrong word maybe, but that failure is absolutely necessary for success, absolutely. Right? So you start to embrace it, right? Even on a baseline level, if you've ever had a sales job before, right? Every no gets you closer to a yes, right? If, let's say I'm selling cars, I close one out of six people that walk through the door of that dealership, right?
Right.
Somebody says no, all right, well, now it's one out of five. I should be getting excited. There's a better ratio every time somebody says absolutely. No. Now it's absolutely. One out of four, one out of three. Well, guess what? I'm about to hit that. And that is what's the salespeople, the way they think that way. And they go, oh, cool. Get another no out of the way. I'm excited about it. You could apply that to comedy. You know, there's so much failure in comedy. You know, every single night when you get on stage, you know, when you're trying to get booked at clubs, you're trying to, you know, get on television, audition, do all that stuff. That mentality, when you really look at it, think about how many times you've booked something, Karen, right? Maybe you've booked a handful of things, but how many times you've really auditioned? You go, oh, I haven't really auditioned that much. I probably closed one out of three. So then you go, well, just audition more.
It's not glamorous. Like, the process of, like, you get like a cute picture here and there and like a good headshot, but like the process of actually doing comedy is like not that cute. No. You know, like the good sets are great, but everything else, like, honestly, it is so embarrassing to do this. And it's embarrassing when you're new, and then you get like little pockets of embarrassment later on. But like, you know, when I was explaining you to Sean and Matt, I was explaining that you're such an outlier even among comics, right? Because I understand, like, and I'm sure you do too, I'm sure everyone does, like the pressure, like the anxiety of wanting to do well at the thing that you've chosen. Like, once you have this emotional connection to it, that it's kind of scary. And comics, Like, here's a real question for you that I've been meaning to ask you on a personal level, like, forever. What separates you from comics who haven't, like, monetized their brand or, like, have a strong brand? People who are really talented. Like, you and I know all these people who haven't done what you've done. And I know you've got, like, this legion of skanks behind you and, like, this forms the base. But not everyone does what you do.
Well, yeah, look, Legion of Skanks, that podcast started off with 100 people listening a week for the first 6 months. That's all we had. We weren't, you know, we didn't have a fan base or television support, and we were doing the most offensive podcast on earth. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like we couldn't, like, you're never going to see big major networks jumping on board with what we're doing. You know, I think it's about taking the shot. And it's about trying to execute ideas. I really think that's what it is. And the other side of it, I'll say though, Karen, comedy is pretty fair. You know, it's pretty fair. So if you're funny and you work in terms of, like, just do the traditional route, which is just meet the right people, get people to like you. You know, this is a really important, this is the component of, you know, any business or anything in the world. If you want to be a librarian and you want to move up in the ranks of librarians in the world, you better get everyone to like you. This is just part of the game. It makes it that much easier. But if you have the a little bit of talent and everybody likes you and you go through the steps, you'll probably have an okay career. Mm-hmm. You know, it's those people that are, it's those people that are willing to take chances that are gonna be able to succeed and take it even further. And I think when I first started a podcast network, people would scoff. When I first started a podcast, people would scoff at it. Dave Smith, who does Legion of Skanks with me, who makes an insane amount of money podcasting. He does a political podcast. He does 3 days a week. It's, you know, he's tons of advertisers. Dave Smith's a very successful podcaster. But when I first brought it up to him, he scoffed at the idea. Like, he didn't, and this is, you know, 12 years ago, whatever it was, when I started podcasting, this is before it was very, very popular with everybody. You know, and there was no path. There was no, like, oh, I know there's this path to make money. I just knew that this was something that was really cool. I really, really liked, and that I wanted to do. And I really wanted to do that. And then one thing leads to the next thing. And you go, like, all right, well, now how do I pick up the phone and, you know, call up, you know, a local place and have them advertise on my show? It all starts from that. Most people scoff. Most people go, like, I'm not going to call somebody. Like, what am I going to do? But it's as simple as that. It's a series of yeses and nos. This is how we started our podcast network. Me and Ralph were sharing ideas. I was working with every podcast network under the sun. I had multiple podcasts. Ralph was working with All Things Comedy, and he had worked with a bunch of different podcast networks. And we were just sharing ideas regularly. Like, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? How are you getting more people? How are you getting the, oh, you got an advertiser? Oh, you just called that company. And we have better ideas than the people that we're working under. And we realized that we didn't really need anybody. And then also we realized that we can create a need for other podcasters because we were thinking differently. We were thinking of it the way podcasters were thinking of it. Not only that, we were thinking of it not like how could we become Joe Rogan 10 million downloads an episode. We were thinking, well, how can we, with a few thousand downloads an episode, start making some money and start monetizing this? And once again, there's a path to everything.
The answer to that question? Like, how did
the answer was that was hustling. The answer was that was picking up the phone, actually calling companies ourselves, reaching out. I mean, listening to advertisers on other podcasts, trying to find the gatekeeper. We created from the ground up. Nobody taught us how to do it. We just created that. And that became another business in itself. One of the things that I had this idea, this is before Patreon was even being used. I don't even know if Patreon existed at the time. But I went to the podcast network that I was on at the time, Stand Up New York Labs. And I said, hey, I was like, I got 2000 downloads an episode for the Real Ass Podcast. Now that's not a lot in the grand scheme of the podcast world. But I know, like, I just know how valuable my fans were. And the small, when you really look at it, like, those 2000 people are really hardcore. They're like underground. They're the ones that are like, they, it's cool. Like, it's not this mainstream thing. These are the most hardcore of the most hardcore fans. That first,
I mean,
core
last thing that I saw of your fans was maybe on your Instagram, I can't remember, but it was someone who had tattooed Legion of Skanks with the world on their freaking face. Like,
yeah,
like you lead a cult.
These 2000 people, if I had 2000 people showing up in a parking lot and saying, like every single week, showing up at a party and listening to me speak for an hour, the cops would shut it down. The National Guard would come. And so in my mind, I'm going, there's something really valuable there. I can't be, the network was like, oh dude, in order to get advertisers, you got to have 50,000 downloads. Simple as that. I'm going, no, there's something there. I was like, you can't tell me that my 2,000 people are worth them. So I was like, well, why don't we do a subscription thing where we build into the website, like $3 a month, they get access to bonus content, the video versions of the show. This is literally before Patreon. This is, you know, now everyone's sort of doing this, but that sort of has how we created Gas Digital. So we have our own platform, which is X amount of dollars. The collective, you get an entire on-demand library. You know, there's only a limited amount of episodes that are available on iTunes and YouTube, et cetera. But this was all based off of just real conversations and taking the chances. And in the moment, not second guessing yourself. This is what's fun about, you know, being an entrepreneur, being a comedian. But, you know, well, I'll say entrepreneur, it's a bigger, bigger subject. It's like, we're our own bosses. We can take the chances. We can do what we want to do. That's the amazing part about this, right? And more often than not, if you believe in yourself and you believe you're a good entrepreneur, just trust your instincts. More often than not, you will figure out a path to get there. I forget which book it is, but it's a really interesting book, and they sort of go into just the idea, like, human beings, we are designed to hit goals. We are literally designed. By design, we eat three meals a day. We pay our bills every month. Even right now, if you don't have any money in the bank, even if you're behind, even if you're sleeping on a friend's couch, you're not starving to death. You're hitting this goal. The problem is you're setting the wrong goal. You're setting the goal of, I want to eat lunch today and I want to sleep on my friend's couch. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Instead of thinking big and saying, I want to make $1 million or $1 billion or whatever the fuck it is, it's the absolute truth. And I learned this very, very, very practically. I have a 7-year-old son, and I remember when my son was born, I was very poor. I mean, really, really broke. You know, this is 7 years ago, and just struggling. This is before we started the podcast network. This is podcast was very small at the time. We weren't really making money on the podcast. I'd work a day job for like 6 months and then I'd quit and try to tour and do whatever I can do. It was just really struggling. And I remember just saying to myself, or saying to my chick and, you know, his mother and you know, whatever it was, but I set this goal. I was like, all right, by the time he has memories, I want to have a nice place. I want to have money in the bank. I want to be somewhat successful on television, stability, right? That's actually really, I wasn't even a crazy goal. I was like, I just really want to be stable, right? And I set that at 4 years old, because that's in my mind when I started having memories. When I was 4 years old was when I could start remembering things. So I was like, by the time he's four, so I have these few years to sort of to experiment and fail and to struggle. Of course, 4 years come and I'm exactly where I wanted to be. Exactly. I'm just stable now. I'm not doing as well then as I'm doing now, even. It's 3 years later, right? But I was exactly where I wanted to be. I set that goal and I smashed it. And I had to, because it was for my son. And what I took from that, what everyone should take from that, is we are in complete control. Complete control. And I should have set my goal higher. And I have set my goals higher now. I'm thinking bigger. I'm less emotional about money. I've grown from that experience. That experience right there taught me something. And it was a 4-year experiment that taught me something really valuable. But we really are in control. All of those goals are right there in front of us. And the path, it's right there. I wish we could have like magic goggles to just see the path. But you have to sort of trust your instinct and bob and weave, and you will get there.
One thing that's interesting about what you said, because recently I guess there was a news report that Tyler Perry is reached billionaire status. Mm-hmm. And like, if you follow his journey, like, he was homeless and then he started doing these plays. Like, basically he found a target audience that he started serving, these kind of these black church women and church folks that really didn't watch, maybe, like, they definitely weren't like the skank in terms of the shock value is more the church thing, but these folks didn't really have
it's the yin and the yang. It's the opposite.
The yin and the yang. Crowd,
but they also, everyone needs their own fulfillment. They, right. It's really funny you say that, but continue what you're saying.
But to the, basically he started killing it with these kind of Chitlin Circuit plays. Then it grew and grew and grew. And then he's decided he wanted to make films. And he really didn't need the Hollywood machine because he had his own money that he built from these plays.
Yep.
He starts making these films that some people hate. Some, I'm not even really a big fan of his films. I'm a big fan of his grind. I'm a fan of his hustle. And these films have now made this empire grow. Then he builds the studio. Now, like, and, I just watch the news and say he's a billionaire.
It's a cult like Falling with Terry Perry as well. You know, when I first, when we were planning out this show, Tyler Perry, sorry, or Terry Perry too. When we were planning out this show, Lewis, I had all these questions lined up for you, but you're hitting so many great points. And really and truly, I think my role in this interview is just to kind of, just kind of put the business terms behind what you're doing, because I think what you're doing is actually amazing. So people can understand, as people that are trying to make widgets can see that they can apply this to their lives. People that are, you know, trying to raise cats and dogs can apply it to their lives. I mean, one of the things that you said, like your 4-year experiment was an experiment of understanding thinking big. It was like, you know, and then even got to the point, which was the amazing thing, is that you realize I undersold myself. Like, I should have put the goal higher. And people are scared to put these bars. People are really scared of success. It's amazing when you really break down people. They are so scared of success, and your mind can be your most powerful thing, and it could be your worst enemy if you allow it to. And then what I continue to say again, when everybody gets, like, you're leveraging your skill set. You're staying in your lane. Like, you're not like trying to be a brain surgeon. You're like, I'm funny. I'm good meeting people. I'm going to leverage this brand. And I love what you say, because even when we start our podcast, you know, people ask how many downloads you have, and I'm always like, you know, initially I was always scared to tell the number, but then I was like you said, I have these followers that have value to something. And funny how things are changing now and within social media. Like, advertisers would rather have 10 people with 10,000 followers than one person with 100,000 followers. Because those are like you said, you can get your 2,000 people out on the corner.
They're all hardcore.
They're all hardcore.
Super dedicated. They're all really passionate. So yeah, 100%. I completely agree.
People relate now, like if I relate it to Instagram, like followers to likes, because you see people with 100,000 followers, but then they post something up, they get like 500 likes, 50 likes. While with someone with, I've seen it with 4,000 followers, will have 700 likes, which shows that your followers are believing and taking in everything.
It's about
that
engagement
say.
As well. So you have to be engaged, you know, and it's easier to be engaged with a smaller group of people, right? So the problem is, I think it's almost like you're like, oh, it's not that big yet. People don't take it super seriously until it gets to a certain level, but it's the opposite way of thinking. Like, you have an opportunity to be super engaged with this smaller audience that's really, really hardcore, and they're going to feel special. In turn, they become the biggest ambassadors for what you're doing. And that's a very organic way. I mean, we built a podcast network. Every one of our shows grows in listenership. Every single show. It's not because of luck, or we don't choose the right shows. We have great philosophy on how to grow these brands and what, you know, they should be doing. And it's little small tweaks. It reminds me of playing poker. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know,
philosophy.
It's just the simple ones are just consistency, putting out extra content related to the brand, having clips regularly, having your content in this brand show up in people's feeds more than just simply, hey, listen to this podcast. You know, having clips, images, it also becoming a part of your identity and your brand. And you sort of follow these, you know, core philosophies. You know, it's not that crazy. And we've been able to watch all of our shows grow. And we have a great production team. We have, obviously, we have three different people on our team that do graphics for all of our shows. So it's great, but we had to build that up. But all of this was learned from trying and failing over and over with all my shows. You try something, you fail. I was saying this the other day, like, you know, Skankfest is this amazing comedy festival. We do a 3-day festival, 1,500 people a day. You know, we take over one venue. It's like a party. It's really wild.
It's great.
And it's really, really, people travel from all over the world to come. It's very culty. But it started off as a failed experiment. We did the Legion of Skanks summer barbecue for like 3 years in a row, and nobody came to this thing. 20 people. And it was so, we did a couple of shows, but it took failing a bunch and sort of, you know, adapting and shifting to come up with something that was great. And that was the same thing that happened with Gas Digital. And that's anything you can see or touch.
Once again,
business, it was different, and it wasn't as good as the final product.
Yeah. But once again, what you're doing is, in business terms, like, And it's what it takes. Like, you have confidence in what you're doing. You have confidence in your brand and what you're doing, but you're not ignorant or cocky to the fact that doesn't need improvement, that there's not ways in which opportunity to make it better.
There's improvement,
but
nobody, happening always right now.
But nobody can tell me that you're not in your head. Nobody can tell you that you're not the man, like, but you're open to the idea of like, how do we process improve this? How do we make it better? But it's, my overall brand like is great, but I just, I'm always constantly looking for growth and opportunity.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And that's, my last day job that I worked, was for Equinox, the gym, the high end gym. That was my last job. It was a sales job. They called it a membership advisor, but it was a salesman. And they told us, and it was like 10-day training program. They told us day one, this little gay guy, Chris Uziak, who was awesome, just killer salesman. And he goes in, he's like, they're going to tell you this is a fitness club. This isn't a fitness club. We're a sales brand. And he was sassy, and dude, he did an intensive training program, really, really hardcore sales training, and I loved it. It was such a good, it was, you know, you're dealing with, once again, thinking bigger. I was selling comedy club tickets on the street for years for $10 a pop. That's how I started off in New York City in comedy when I was 19 years old. Now I'm selling, you know, high-end gym memberships to people that make over $250,000 a year. You're dealing with a different, you know, caliber of person, the way you have to talk to them and the way you have to, you know, you have to match their energy. It's a much different thing. Mm-hmm. But this company was pretty incredible because what they did was, he was very right that they were like a sales company, and sales were sort of the lifeblood of this company, because what they did was every department of this company had its own manager and had its own, they had their own sort of set of goals. It was really crazy. So obviously the sales team had a certain amount of goals they had to hit, right? But like the front desk people had their own manager and their own set of goals, group fitness, personal training, the maintenance staff. And what they would do is they would come in and they would bonus these teams based off of progress within each department, right? And they would constantly move that bar higher and higher and higher. So the quality was expected to be expanding and getting better month after month after month in every single department. And if you know something about good sales, salesmen hit their goals. So you have a company that was getting better, breathing to get better at all times. It was like really, really interesting to watch that happen. And I apply that philosophy to all the businesses that I run, comedy. I try to apply it to my life. Like, if you had a manager of every area of your life, your health, your business, the way you deal with your interpersonal relationships, you know, the way your house looks, the way your job is, the way you keep your car, you have a manager, and then you bonus each one of these managers to make sure that every one of these areas of your life is getting better and better and better and better. You'd be a superhero.
Or annoyed. He's here again, like, yo, let me sleep, bro.
You'd be firing on all cylinders because you have people that have a vested interest in making sure that all of those areas of your business or your life or whatever it is are growing and constantly getting better. And if you really stayed on it, I mean, you could really, and you don't need to pay a manager. You can be the manager in every area of your life. If you step back and you said, all right, let me just put on a dry erase board, my health, the food I'm eating, all this, you know the answers. You know the answers. Your business.
I'm gonna put the manager hat on right now for a moment because we got to manage a commercial break. So
when is the book coming out? That's what I want to know, Louis. I think you're due a book, man.
One day, right, so I'll write a book when I have to hit a certain level of success, in my opinion, to you know. I have an idea for a good book though. So
all right, well, we'll find out more about this idea for a good book and more with Louis. Just stay tuned with more Two Black Guys with Good Credit. There's no business like show business. We have our new business spotlight going, so keep it locked.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Today, we are discussing comedy, we are discussing podcasts, we're discussing business with Luis Gomez. He is our new business spotlight. And I have a question for you, Luis, because I know your show is popping. I know the Legion of Skanks and the Skank Fest, all this stuff is killing it. But I don't want to assume that everyone knows what this is. And it's pretty provocative, the name. It's a little like, it's kind of racy. What can you describe what this is for people who might be like, what are they talking about? Like,
Legion of Skanks, it's a podcast. And it's we call ourselves the most offensive podcast on earth. And
absolutely is.
It is.
Yeah. I listened to two episodes. I'm like, whoa.
So it's really important to understand that it's like we, on that show, we try to push the envelope as far as possible. And, I'm Puerto Rican, my two co-hosts are white. They're Jewish though, so they get away with it a little bit more than the average white guy.
Jew is not but, white. I just want to put that out there. Jew
what'd you say?
Not white. Jew is not white. We pass.
So you are particularly white, Karen, please. Okay.
When she wants to be.
I take so offense. This is the most offensive podcast in the world. Jew is not white. Please, Puerto Rican rattlesnake. Go ahead.
We try to push the envelope, and we created this podcast. It was honestly, we created it before cancel culture was the way it is now. We might not have done it had we known, you know, but at this point, we've gone so far with the show that it's like we've sort of created a niche with like provocative, edgier comedy. And it is really all in good fun. The fan base, the sweetest people in the world, my co-hosts are the sweetest people in the world. We take shots at everybody, literally everybody, whether you're-
No holds barred.
No holds barred, black, white, Jewish, Puerto Rican, women, men. We did a whole episode. The last episode, which is coming out tonight, I guess Marilyn Manson's old girlfriend. Right. What's her name? What's the girl's name?
Evan Rachel Wood.
Yeah, she did like a whole like she was on the stand talking about some like anti-abuse thing, and we spent an hour and a half just doing Marilyn Manson impressions. But we do. It's for the people that want that. We don't go and throw it out there. I'm not tweeting it. I'm not posting, on Instagram.
Right, you have an audience.
Well, let's pause for 1 second, Luis, because Karen gave me one interesting fact about you, and I was like, I'm going to ask, was it intentional? Because yeah. I know your business acumen now is extremely high. Yeah. So she says you're an online fight picker. Now, is that like done intentionally as a business model, or is it just your passion, your personality taking over? I think it's a great mod. I think it's a great angle, by the way.
It's all right. So it's I let my anger get the best of me sometimes, and we all get stuck in this stupid Twitter world, right? But I do step. I put my phone down. Like I don't live there. Like I'm not like I haven't been on Twitter. I realized this today. I was like, I've only retweeted stuff like the past couple weeks. I've been training. I'm doing an MMA fight against a guy.
That's what I'm saying. You're fighting somebody.
I'm actually doing an MMA fight. So yeah. I've just been so busy, and I've been streaming on Twitch, and I have my podcast and these business. And so I haven't been on, and it feels good to not do that. But it is part of the brand as well. We sort of have this little dance and this back and forth. And I think the fans, it's part of engaging with the fans is to – you have this back and forth with some of these people sometimes, but I'm one of these people. When your mom, there's something about your mom beating you up that you don't hold grudges.
But when I saw
you, I don't care. Like all these people that I talked to online, if they wanted to go have a beer, I would be completely cool with it.
Say
I just
what
don't
you say, and then you're good after.
But
you, get
you
it
know
off.
What? Yeah. You know what, Luis? But I didn't know until I listened to a few episodes that you're gonna have this MMA fight. And I was like, this guy's a genius. So now he's like, okay, most people have these fights, Twitter fights online. They're not gonna take it out on this quote unquote streets. But this guy, is he really the craziest guy, or the smartest guy? Because now he's putting his hands to his mouth, saying like, yeah, I can back it up. Wow. And I'm going MMA now. I was like, wow, this is kind of genius. For years, I pick fights online, and now I'm going to take it to the MMA. I was like, I was like, Karen, this guy is really bright.
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny because
unless you get your ass kicked and then you don't remember anything. But
Lewis turns all of his beefs into money. That is what is so interesting, because it almost feels intentional. And I believe intention
doesn't want to admit it. I think it has to be intentional.
Well, the fight, I didn't have a beef with Jason. Jason has two pro MMA fights. He's a radio host, very big audience. And I did a fight 2 years ago, a charity fight against another comedian who's a black belt in Taekwondo. And I never trained a day in my life. And I wanted to just test myself to see if I can go and train and get into a cage and have an MMA fight and see how I would do, right? So I won that fight by decision. 2 years later, Jason...
You beat a black belt guy.
I beat a black belt. He was Taekwondo. He's a pussy. Yeah. So, but Jason, if you guys can see, I don't know if you have a computer there, but look up Jason Ellis. He's a tattooed, like, you know, former pro athlete. He's a former skateboarder, like X Games athlete. And he's got two professional fights. He's been training for a decade. Much bigger task at hand. And I'm as fat as I've ever been. I stopped training after that fight 2 years ago. I didn't start training again. But this is like, it's an analogy for testing yourself. It truly is. Like, it's so funny because, like, we're talking about all this business stuff and sort of like everything sort of flows into the next thing with me in a weird way. Yeah. So the goal is not about, you know, winning a fight. It is to a certain degree, but that is like the goal. And then there's all of these peripheral benefits of hitting or achieve or trying to hit that goal. Right. So it's like, if I'm trying to win this fight, I am going to get in incredible shape. Right. If you could say, hey, if you snap your fingers, would you take a 6-pack, lose 40 pounds of fat, be in the best shape of your life, feel as good as you've ever felt to go get punched by this guy? I think most people would take that, just that alone. Not only the fact that I have some incredible sponsors that my company has sold for this fight. I'm making more money than most fighters in the UFC off of doing I'm a comedian fighting a radio guy.
It just sounds like sales, though. It's like, it sounds like you sell yourself on stuff too, you know, like you're all like your targets and stuff. I know you said you make phone calls or whatever, but it just sounds so internal to me.
Yeah. A lot of it. I mean, for sure. I mean, a lot of what I do is just having conversations in my head. That's my whole job. It really is. I don't do anything. I think that was always an interesting thing as well. Like when I started getting into sales, where it's like, I don't like pick up things and put them down and build things. Like it's almost like magic. Like when you're an entrepreneur or a salesman, like I'm saying words into the air and then money ends up in my bank account. It's like a spell. It's like there's a series of words. It's and then hocus pocus. Then it's there. If you really if you step back and realize, like from a physical sense, what it really is. Step back and look at what I'm doing. Let's say you didn't understand this language. You were just an alien, right? A space alien that came here and was analyzing what I do. I'm going zippity zoppity zoopity zoppity zop 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 zop. And then money goes into a bank account. It's very interesting. When you really understand, when you sort of break down at a baseline level, what we're doing,
you're providing a service and people are like using you, the sponsors are using you to get into your brand, to get into your followers, to buy their product. You know what I mean? It's a chain. And everybody has a position, you know, and your position is I can bring an audience. Put me in an MMA cage, I'm going to bring an audience. Put me on a stand-up tour, I'm going to bring an audience. Bring me to the Brooklyn, I'm going to bring an audience. Wherever I go, I can bring an audience, and you can tap into that audience. That's what you do.
What's the bigger business, stand-up or the podcasting? And has all this COVID stuff shifted your business model at all?
The bigger business is the podcast network, for sure. That's a pretty big business. The stand-up, the festivals. Well, the festival's a pretty big business as well. Actually, to be honest with you, the festival... that obviously was really majorly affected by COVID. We do two events a year. We're trying to do two events a year now, and we didn't get to do either of them in 2020. So that business took a major hit this year. But you know, once again, it's our job to adapt. You know, you got to just play the cards. You know, you're not going to be able to control the cards, but you play the cards, you know,
the best way you can.
Yeah. Absolutely. But you could win. I love that analogy. You remember the movie Rounders with Matt Damon?
Yeah.
So he's just talking about the World Series of Poker, and he was like, you know, people always say it's luck, like what card you get. It was like, well, if it's luck, why is it always the same eight guys at the last table of the World Series of Poker every year? It was like, because it's not luck. It's how you play those cards. And, you know, that's a philosophy that I have in my life. I wasn't dealt the worst hand in my life, but, I know people that were dealt better hands. And it's like COVID sucked. And it sucks. It still sucks. But it's just another card. We got a 2-7 offsuit. Are you gonna lie down and give up your business? A lot of people did. And I think it was easy to go like, well, you know, you saw, and I'm not saying anybody, but I know a lot of people who were sort of like their businesses weren't maybe killing it, and they saw this as an excuse to get out. You know, and for us, we said, well, no, we have to adapt. We have to shift. We moved everything over to Zoom very quickly. And everyone does it on Zoom. But we said, well, how can we make it look better on Zoom? How can we do our own graphics? How can we do our own custom? How do we make sure we have better lighting, better cameras, better sound? You know, and we made ourselves stand out even during that time. So, yeah, it sucks. You know, obviously, we could have made more money on that side. But yeah, I think the podcast business probably grew in a very, very big way because of COVID. A lot of people were sitting around and, you know, very, very anxious. They want something to do. So,
well, you know, what's next?
Oh yeah, sorry. Go ahead. What is
next? No, go ahead, Karen. Karen, go ahead, Karen.
No, go ahead.
So what's next for Mr. Gomez?
We got a lot of cool ideas, a lot of things. COVID put everyone in this sort of limbo state for a little while. And there were things that are cooking right now that I just have the flame on very, very low because it's a timing thing and people are sort of afraid to make decisions right now. But I have a feeling that in the new year, I think 2021 is going to be a massively, massively big year for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think the virus is going to either we're going to have a vaccine or the treatments are going to be, look, I think once the election happens, all sudden treatments are going to be more effective. but, you know, whatever, not to be conspiracy theorists, but I think we'll have the treatments, we'll have the vaccine. I think 2021 will be a really, really big year of growth for everybody that wants it.
Yeah. I think everybody will just appreciate the entertainment events. Like, they'll just be so appreciative and people are going to go all out. You know, my last big event I went to was Trinidad Carnival. Had I known that was my last big event, man, I would have been running the streets naked in Trinidad.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine what people are going to be like when
we were finally 3 weeks out from Skankfest before in Texas. We were in Houston doing Skankfest South for the first time ever out of New York City. And we were maybe 2 weeks out. We were down there doing our final walkthrough for tech. Like, it was this big, crazy event. And we just got killed. So March 27th through 29th, 2021 are the new dates. It's very unique. It's a 3-day party. That's the best way to describe it. There just happens to be three comedy stages that are happening and podcasts and naked roast battles and pro wrestling. And it's very fun. It's very, very unique.
And finance in the corner.
Finance in the corner. Your financial advice.
Hey, right there. We help you improve your credit score after you finish wrestling.
I did Skankfest last year. I did two sets there and I was so, so excited. It was such a crazy vibe because first of all, 2021 Skankfest is going to be wild. You know that, right? Like,
yeah,
people are going to come out in like the thousands. But it's so funny because I remember at the end of Skankfest, like the very last day, and things had popped off and it's such a party vibe. Like, everybody is, it's like a controlled chaos, like explosion over there. Yeah. And I remember I like found you at the end of it and I was like, Lewis, because you and I go way back. I've known you for like 13 years.
I know.
I know you from before the kid, before the podcast, like, remember, like, oh my God, this, like, you know, Jay's daughter is all grown up now. When I met you, she was 5.
I know.
But I remember I found you and I was like, Lewis, I remember all the stuff before and I remember before all this stuff. And now look at it. This place is wild. Look at all these skanks who love you. This place is full of women skanks. And like, I'm really proud of you. And I meant it. Like, I honestly, like, I know I've known other people for that amount of time who didn't do it. I didn't do that. It was the best time. And my question is this, like, so are you going to do this forever? Is this your life? Are you like a skank leader forever?
I'm sure I'm gonna run various businesses and be involved in you know, projects that excite me forever. I'm never gonna retire. Like, if I had $30 million in the bank, I wouldn't just go stop working. It excites me to create. It excites me to collaborate. Like, you know, when you do comedy, especially, it becomes your life. It becomes your, you know, your nightlife. All of your friends, you go out every night, and like, that's who you know. And after a decade of doing comedy, you know, that's all you know. Like, you know, that's all of our friends now, for the most part, are people that do stand-up comedy. Very far and few between beyond that. I think that that's sort of like built into me, where like I have a need to, you know, this is like my life, getting up and working and collaborating with people. That's my best relationships are people that I work with. And I work with them in a much more traditional sense than I do with stand-up comedy. Like, you know, Ralph or my production staff, you know, my executive producer, Bobby Hutch. Like, I talk to these people in a very, very, they have my passwords and my emails, my cell phone passwords. Like, these are people that, like, you know, there's a level of trust, because when you're trying to create something unique and bigger than yourself, you have to, you really do have to trust those people. If you want to really collaborate in a very big way, and it's not, you know, Gas Digital stands for Gomez and Sutton. That's my business partner, Ralph Sutton. So, you know, Gomez and Sutton, I guess. But like that, the team that we work with, you know, it's so important that we sort of have that relationship, and everybody that works for us as well started off as being a fan of the brand and a fan of the, most of our producers never produced before they worked for us. They learned how to produce podcasts. They came in as an intern and getting coffee and learning how to edit. And, you know, and we have these people that this is what they do full time now. There was no such thing as podcast producer when we started Gas Digital. That wasn't a job that existed. Now there's a few other companies that are out there that are doing it, but we were doing something that nobody else was doing. You know, Bobby, who is our EP, who is a part owner of the company now, you know, he quit a really, you know, a very serious job that he had for a decade, that he had all the benefits, and he took that same chance that we were taking, you know. So it excites me to collaborate with people and to create with people, you know, and that's really what it is. Like Big J and Dave, I collaborate with these guys. We come together and we have our own set of unique things, and we you know, spit out this product at the end. And I couldn't imagine not doing that and not having, even when I'm like dating a chick, I'm dating a chick now, I'm like, she's working on a TikTok dance. I'm like, all right, I want to help you with the lighting. And how can we like, I'm just like, yeah, I'm dating a younger chick. I'm dating a 23-year-old girl, by the way. She's working on a TikTok. I'm such a creep. But it's true. Like, I can't just sit there and not want to come together creatively if I'm going to have any sort of relationship with somebody. It's just that sort of was excites me. So I can never imagine me not working like that. You know, who knows? I don't know that we'll have I don't know if we'll have a time. I don't know how long the world will want to accept the types of jokes that we make on shows like that. You know, that time will tell. Once people stop laughing at stuff like that, then we have to shift and do something different.
Yeah, you just took the words out of my mouth. You'll adapt and move on. Real entrepreneurs do. You're a serial entrepreneur. You'll adapt and you'll figure it out and you'll transition if that time comes.
For sure.
Well, Lewis, we appreciate you sharing your journey, your insights, and the success story that is Gas Digital and the Legion of Skanks. Maybe we can do a Skanks with Credit kind of collaboration in the future or something.
I would love it.
But we want to again thank you and let you go. We know you have other business to attend to, so we appreciate your time. And
I appreciate it, gentlemen. Thank you very much. You appreciate it. You guys are the best. Karen, you're awesome. Thank you very much. And
so where can people find you, Lewis? Like,
You guys. So if you go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, you get all three of the podcasts that I host. They're all the podcasts are free, and you just go to the individual pages. You don't even have to sign in or anything. You can just go there, listen to or watch the latest episodes. If you on the premium side, if you sign in, then you can get access to the whole library and uncensored, ad free, all that other stuff. But if you just go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, Legion of Skanks, Real Ass Podcast, and Believe You Me are the three shows that I do. And just look out for other stuff.
Good luck with that fight, man.
Thanks, man.
Good luck, bro. Good luck. What's the scorecard on that? What's the odds and even? What are your favorites?
I don't know yet, but we're gonna have a betting company putting the odds out.
You are awesome, man. I was only joking. You're serious. You're awesome, man. I love it. You're working every angle, bro. 100%. You're working every angle, brother. I love it, man. Mr. Gomez, it's a pleasure meeting you, brother. I hope to
Thanks, guys.
Help out one day. Yeah.
All right. Bye,
guys. All right, guys. So that's it for the new business spotlight. What did you guys think? What were your takeaways?
That went super quick, bro.
That flew. Lewis is such a cool person to talk to in comedy because I think he downplays it a little bit, but he is not common. it's more than even just like the businesses and the business kind of savvy and like the lack of preciousness about it and the fact that he employs people and like brings all these people up with him. You know, he also like doesn't let the anxiety of a creative career get to him. It's really rare, you know, to talk to someone in a creative thing who doesn't feel kind of both like liberated and limited by it at the same time.
I think the lesson I got from him and what people should always remember is like believing in yourself and thinking big and setting those bars for yourself,
right.
Putting them high. But a lot of people set these bars. Like I have a cousin of mine, she had an injury, and basically the doctor said exercise. So yesterday was her birthday. I'm like, have you been exercising? I'm feeling stiff. Have you been exercising? No. Like, if you're not going to put in the work, you're not going to get the results, you know? And I think Lewis is a testament. Like, I put in the work. So I expect the result. He expects the result. He expects to learn on some, expects to fail on some, but overall he knows in his mind, if it's one in every six deals you close, he's happy. Okay, I failed this one, failing because the next one I'm going to win.
I'm due. Right.
I'm due. Yeah, and you got to put in the work.
I would agree with – I would echo that takeaway in terms of the setting your goals. Like he said, we are designed to hit goals. It's just what goals are you going to set for yourself? But the other thing I would add to that I thought was an important takeaway is to focus on – and everyone can't do this, or maybe everyone can, but focusing on things you're passionate about. So like Absolutely. He has a passion for comedy and a passion for the podcasting and the networking and it seems like even if he had $30 million, he would still want to be doing this. So I think his passion and his goal setting, you combine those two things and it's a successful combination. So
I always say that, you know, to say that everybody has a special gift. It's how we leverage that gift, mm-hmm. you know, and I think he understands that.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't settle for the, you know, feel good rewards of comedy. Like he said, it does feel like magic. You say some words, podcasting's like that, and then money appears and like people laugh and clap and it's absolutely intoxicating. But the goal has to be bigger than that, right? Like to be like
Absolutely.
The dad of a business, basically the dad of Skanks and the dad of a human son. You really have to have it together.
And one other important nugget he said was...
Why you got a point, bro?
In terms of like when he talked about his girlfriend, his TikTok young girlfriend, mm-hmm. how when she's doing videos, how he's seeing how he can... Like he wants to elevate the product. He doesn't just want to settle for, here's the grilled cheese sandwich. No, he wants to... How can I make this? How can I plate this? How can I present this better? I don't just want to settle. We have our podcast on. It's like, how can I compete? Now we're on Zoom because of COVID. What can we do to elevate it? He's always seeming
he's
to
always
think
adding
about...
Value.
Right, added value.
Right,
he's adding value.
And even the
But believing in himself, them. Very important, but believing in himself.
And you know what? He pays it forward. Like I've watched him believe in other people in a way that made them work harder. And like, I've watched it. I've been around Lewis for years and years. And I remember like him having an intern competition with people who are now his like salaried paid staff, who were just fans who wanted to be around the show. Like he brings people with him, you know? And I think that value add paradigm is also really unique to comedy because comedy is a selfish pursuit. It just is, like getting on stage and having a mic and deciding that you above all else, literally physically above everyone else should be talking and they should not, is an ego thing, you know? And to have it always in your head that you should be adding value and bringing people with you, like, you know, we mentioned that Lewis beefs, and he does. Lewis beefs so much for an adult. He said he's always got like a Twitter war with someone, but he turns it into money for everybody. Like I've seen him get into
Okey Pocus, right? He said Okey Pocus.
He actually, I watched a video of him almost getting into a physical fight. Now, keep in mind, these are all adults like in their 40s, but getting into a physical fight with another comic and then making up with that person and going on tour, making a bunch of money. You know, it's like there isn't like a room for grudges. It's like all business.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I think you should be able, there's a lot of gems that were dropped in this show, even for our show. I'm scared what our next meeting is going to be like, where we're going to be thinking the trajectory that we're going to have for our own show. So those that are listening.
Or trajectory, either one.
Or whatever.
that's above my IQ, but yes. I wonder how we're going to think moving forward. How's that?
There we go.
But no, I appreciate Lewis. I think he's great. I love what he's doing. Hopefully I'll be able to get some of his energy and our listeners will as well. Matt?
Yeah, well, that brings this episode to a close. So I hope everyone enjoyed that and got a takeaway out of it. And that's it for this week. I'm Matt Smith, one half of Two Black Guys with Good Credit. And remember, nothing changes if nothing changes. And I'm out.
And I am one third of Two Black Guys with Good Credit. I am a Jew, but also a black guy with okay credit, getting better every day. And I'd like to remind you that, as I always say, it's not what you do, it's what you do next.
Wonderful. And I'm Sean, the better third now of two black guys with good credit. And as I say every week, your money's your money. Keep it in your damn pocket. And hey, if you want to send us a shout out, you want to email us whatever good ideas you have, please don't forget to email us at tbgwgc@gmail.com. That is the acronym for two black guys with good credit at gmail.com. Looking forward to hearing you guys, and I'm out. Peace. With good
credit. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.